choke the parochial corncrake, you aching Jacobs. Welcome to the Blind Boy Podcast. I have a very special episode for ye this week. I have a special guest, Hollywood actor Robbie Sheehan. I recorded the chat last week at my gig in Vicar Street. It was a live podcast, and Robbie Sheehan was my guest. And that's also the reason why, for last week's podcast, the second half of it, my voice was quite hoarse. Because myself and Robbie had so much crack that I was shouting into the microphone, roaring into the microphone for an hour, and it destroyed my voice. So this week's episode isn't necessarily a relaxing podcast hug like I usually do. This is quite a fun, energetic episode because it was a fun, energetic night. It was in Vicar Street, and the atmosphere of the gig, it was a healing atmosphere. The audience were fantastic, and the vibe in the room was one of healing through laughter after we've all spent so long in fucking isolation. So it was a magnificent night, and it's a privilege to be playing it for you today on this week's podcast. But like I said, if you're here for a podcast hug, this isn't really the one. Maybe go back to an earlier episode, or I'll be back with a podcast hug next week. I'm conscious also that there's probably a load of new listeners right now who've come here to listen to Robbie Sheehan, because Robbie is ridiculously famous. He's in Umbrella Academy on Netflix, and he's huge worldwide. So there's going to be a lot of new listeners listening to this podcast. You're incredibly welcome, and I hope you enjoy it, and I hope that you go back and listen to some earlier episodes of this podcast and become a regular listener. But one thing I will say to you, if you're a huge Robbie Sheehan fan, I don't do like traditional interviews. What I try and do is to have conversations, especially if the person is incredibly famous, because in the media space, really famous people, they generally just get to do quite boring interviews where it's turn and response, and they're asked questions about their career or about what they're working on. I don't do that. I try to have organic human conversations about whatever the fuck. So that's what I do. So if you're listening to this and you're disappointed that I'm not asking very specific questions about Umbrella Academy or some other aspect of Robbie's career, that's not the vibe that I'm going for. So please bring that into your awareness as you listen to this and enjoy the crack. Before I get into the chat, I want to give Robbie a little plug. Robbie's after releasing a brand new book, his first collection of short stories, called Disappearing Act. And the way Robbie describes it is quite exciting, because so Robbie's an actor, he's not necessarily a writer. Well, he is now, he's just after writing a book, so he's a writer now. But acting is his predominant artistic expression. In writing this collection of short stories, Disappearing Act, which is out today, in writing this collection of short stories, he approached it from the perspective of being an actor. And he talks about it in this podcast, but he speaks about when he has to take on a character in a role on TV, his job as an actor is to basically write that character's backstory, to write their backstory, to figure out how they would be and how they would feel in different situations, to create a fictional universe for the character that Robbie has to portray. And that's how he approached his book of short stories. And I find that that's a very interesting approach. It's a cross-disciplinary approach, which I'm always interested in, because you know from myself, with my own short stories, sometimes I'll be writing a short story and I'm not writing it as a writer, I'm writing it as a painter, or I'm writing it as a musician. Even though the medium is words, you can write while approaching it from a completely different discipline. So if you're interested in getting Robbie's stories, the book is called Disappearing Act, and it's in shops now. Disappearing Act by Robbie Sheehan. I think my voice is still a small bit crackly. What the fuck is that about? So I'm going to go straight into the interview now. It was wonderful fun. It was wonderful fun, and I hope you enjoy it. Robbie's a lovely fella.
It's so lovely to see all of you.
God bless
you, blind boy.
Thank you so much for coming along.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. I've been listening to your podcast for years.
Thank you very much, Robbie.
I've been podcast stalking you for many, many years now. You're with me in the shower quite regularly. I'm sure a lot of you, he's with you in the shower. Am I wrong?
The last time I met Robbie, I was doing a gig. Was it Vancouver or Toronto?
Toronto.
I was doing a gig in Toronto.
Rockstar.
And I was interviewing circus freaks on stage. Lovely fellas, the monsters of schlock. Now, I've never put out the podcast live because it's basically 2 hours of lads on stage hammering nails into their nose.
Yeah.
And that's very lovely to see. Live. You could see it, but it's not great to listen to. And then Robbie arrives backstage. I think you might have had a can or two.
Possibly, yeah.
And the lads had a large bear trap. And we don't have bears in Ireland.
I think it was a coyote trap. You know, because a bear trap has serrated teeth on it, doesn't it?
It was something that Robbie Sheehan shouldn't put his arm into.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, granted.
So Robbie was backstage demanding to put his fucking elbow into something that was designed to murder a bear.
It was a morbid curiosity. I wanted to know what it felt like, you know. Like getting bitten by a poisonous snake or something.
Would you be into that now? Are you the type of person who's curious about being bitten by different types of venom? Or if I come up to you now with a salamander and said, I'm gonna bite you with this salamander, would you be, I'd rather not, or fuck it, let's see what happens?
I don't know if I'd be too fussed with a salamander, to be honest. But I'm staying on a farm currently, and the owners of the farm have loads and loads of reptiles in their house.
What type?
They have pythons, tortoises, geckos, tarantulas. They have all sorts of stuff. And I was thinking, like, I'd love to feel what it would be like if one... Because they were telling me they have one snake that's really pissed off and angry and defensive. So whenever they go in to feed it, it starts, like, going like that. Like, going, yeah, yeah, whoa! And, like trying to get at... And I was thinking, wow, that'd be mad just to feel what it would be like.
And,
you know, while we're on this earth briefly.
No, I can understand it. I'd be more like, I don't want to get bitten by the snake. but that would be more me.
That's a fair position.
But it's people are different. People are different. So you're someone, like, I saw you with the bear trap. And it made me go that, like, if I'm in a room and there's a bear trap, I'm going to be like, that's for killing bears. So that's got nothing to do with me. I'm going to not go near that.
He also, my landlord also told me that there are lots of false widows around the cabin.
Oh, yeah.
And they're quite present in Ireland now.
So there's these two lads up in Galway. They work in a thing called the Venom Lab. I interviewed them while I was in Galway. They're fascinating individuals.
Wow.
So these are two lads who they study venom. Right, that, like, there were leaders in this, but like yourself, they both love getting stung. They fucking love it. And they kind of couldn't say it on the podcast because I interviewed them, because they kind of lose their jobs.
Yeah, it might.
So they had to.
It might start to make their jobs look like a fetish.
Exactly. But the interesting thing was, so this fella in particular, he'd been bitten by fucking everything, right?
Wow.
He said the worst thing of all was he was in Africa. Like, they go into the middle of the Congo with students and they search for the most venomous insects and snakes and everything. So he'd gotten bitten by... He was lying in bed. It was a giant centipede. And he said it was 3 days of being stabbed to death.
Oh, my God.
Like, he couldn't believe it.
Wow.
So he's been bitten by everything, and he will... there's a scale of the pain, and that was the most for him. And then one day, he was out his back garden just mowing his lawn in Galway. And he got stung by a bee and went into extreme anaphylactic shock and had to be rushed to hospital. So he had been... So every time you get bitten, what it does is it triggers your immune response.
Yeah.
He'd done it so much that he'd made himself allergic to a Galway bee.
But not a Congolese python.
No.
That's still all right.
No.
I once worked with an actor who had, like, sore shoulders from doing stunts and stuff. And so he flew in one of these bee sting venom doctors.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
The guy says, so have you had this before? He's like, no, I haven't, no. So he was like, well, we'll just give you one dose and see how it goes. And then after about, I don't know how long it was.
They inject the venom of a bee into your spine.
Yeah, but into the area that's inflamed, right?
Yeah.
And then after a while, Jerry, the actor, he goes, ah, not really feeling it, and it's still kind of sore. Give us another one. And then went into anaphylactic shock. And now has to carry an EpiPen everywhere he goes. Self-administered.
It's no joke. Yeah. I mean, these lads in Galway as well, that they're really studying the bee venom, because it's going to have very positive impact on people who have immune disorders. So people who have like MS, they want to inject bee venom into their spines to hopefully, it's whatever way it fucks with the immune system. So there's benefits to it, but it can go either way.
Did you hear that bees can smell COVID?
Yeah. Have you ever seen the Japanese drug sniffing wasps?
Little uniforms on them and stuff.
Tell me about the COVID sniffing bees first.
You know, I watched that HBO series about the Q and the QAnon movement in the US, which eventuated in the storming of Capitol Hill in Washington. And so I went on that website where all the Q communications were happening, which is called 8chan. And there's a lot of sort of subversive articles that they believe you wouldn't see in the mainstream media. And a lot of them are right. I mean, there's a lot of kind of hate-oriented stuff, but there's also quite interesting stuff on there. And so there was an article about some Dutch researchers who'd proven that honeybees can smell COVID, just the way, like, dogs can smell cancer or weed in your suitcase or whatever.
So in Japan, wasps can smell drugs.
Wow.
So what they did in Japan was, instead of getting dogs to go around the airport smelling wasps or smelling drugs, they got it looks like a speed gun. And they have about 5 or 6 wasps taped to the top of it. And they basically point the wasps at cocaine. And it's a better way.
Amazing.
And it uses less resources as well, because a lot of effort goes into training a cocaine smelling dog.
Wow, it's a very educational evening, you know, about the insect world.
So, you're from Portlaoise?
I am indeed, of origin.
And we were having a conversation earlier where it was quite an empathic conversation. You were complimenting Limerick on the wonderful Troy Studios.
Oh yeah.
And then I turned around and just, it's an instinctive thing. I just said, Asher, look, you've got the prison up in Portlaoise.
Yeah, like yeah. A lot of Irish people, I mentioned Portlaoise, they don't know where it is.
It's a beautiful name. Portlaoise. Yeah.
It's a port for the most inland county in Ireland. It's one of the few ports in the country.
But the reason I said that to you was like, you know, you go, fair play to Limerick, you have this lovely film studio. And then I felt bad and said, you have that prison, Robbie, it's not too bad, don't worry about it. Yeah. It felt like... when you're in school and you're both doing pass English, and then I have to turn around and say, I'm going up to honours English.
Yeah, you're like, what?
Are
you?
Yeah, it was like that.
You're
it
leaving like me that. Here with the prison. It's a very infrastructural town, because beside the prison, there's a prison officer training facility, and across the way, there's a mental hospital, and beside the mental hospital, there's a hospital for sick people, you know, illness and what have you.
I like that got a cheer.
Oh, nice one. Illness, woo!
Are you a nurse? Ah, fair enough. That makes sense. All right, okay.
Nice one. So there's all the kind of civic stuff that a country kind of needs. They shoved it all in Portlaoise.
What's it like? Oh, you're going to go for one of those?
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, do you know what?
I've done a few Q&As in my time.
No, you're dead fucking right. Hit myself into the face with it.
Yeah, that thing was oppressive.
That's what happens when you don't gig for 2 fucking years. You forget how to use a microphone.
But
no,
you know
that's
what?
A much better... I forgot you could even do that.
I was reading a book called Leash Folk Tales today. I was kind of welling up because I forgot the fact that Fionn McCool is from Leash. Right?
Really?
And he was raised in the Slievebloom Mountains, which is in West Leash. And Ballyfin, which is the college I went to. Oh, there's a fair few Leash heads in tonight, yeah.
Leash heads who appear to be from multiple parts of Leash all at once.
Yeah.
Like a Leash superposition. Like, what's that about?
But are you from Leash? Oh, fair play. Oh, that's a coincidence, because you don't really announce your guests until about 10 minutes before
the
gig.
Yeah, I don't, yeah.
Which is a nice thing.
I like
a
lucky bag.
Thing.
I like the lucky bag situation. I like people not knowing. who's going to, you know what I mean?
I think it's not, it's like the Tommy Tiernan chat show.
Exactly, just, yeah.
You sort of, because, yeah, other chat shows feel very over-rehearsed these days.
You don't want
to
tell people who's coming on stage. You want that whole fucking, it'd be like someone telling you what's in the lucky bag. I don't want to know. Or the fucking, honestly, would you buy a Kinder Egg if you know what toy is in there? No, it's not the surprise.
Not since they started doing ornaments. That was a real letdown in the Kinder
and
world.
Also, one thing I do enjoy about my podcast is that you could come here and it's either like you, who's like an actual Hollywood actor, or just a butcher. I could literally... Like I have 3 other gigs in November. Like, I could just bring a butcher, like, for real. Genuinely. I was up in Mullingar. I interviewed some fella who used to be in a band. He fell asleep during the podcast.
So the guy fell asleep mid-podcast?
Yeah, and that's the reason. So when I came here tonight and
we do speed before the gig now.
And also, it's why I asked Robbie's not wearing socks. And you did have these fetching socks on. And I said, Robbie, take off the socks, man, because I've got a fan here and it blows on his feet so Robbie doesn't fall asleep. But he fell asleep in the middle of the gig, man.
Wow. Did you take that personally? Or?
No. No. I responded to it in the moment. I thought it was quite tender. Once I realised he wasn't dead.
Yeah.
Because that was the first reaction.
I went to a play recently in the RSC in Stratford-upon-Avon, and there was a very old gentleman next to me. In fact, he was standing behind my seats. There's quite a few standing seats. And I sort of went, come here, we'll scooch down. So we sat right close to each other. And he fell asleep like 5 minutes into the play. And then at the applause at the interval, he went, he goes, I absolutely love coming to the theatre. Oh, I love it. I love the show. He'd been asleep the whole thing.
Was that Shakespeare's gaff, Stratford upon?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In Stratford, yeah, exactly.
You've done a ton of shit on stage as well, haven't you?
Yeah, well, over the years, sort of intense pockets, but sort of with lots of space in between. In fact, I'm going to do a play in Dublin in February, March. I'm going to do Samuel Beckett's Endgame.
Fucking lovely.
With the great comedian Frankie Boyle.
Fuck off.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Where are you doing that?
In the Gate.
How long are you doing that for?
And Sean McGinley and Gina Moxley. Like, proper stellar cast.
Are you looking forward to that?
Yeah.
How did Frankie get involved in that?
So Frankie, the agency I'm represented by, Ireland, the UK, have a huge comedy department, and myself and Rose Parkinson, who you know, were kind of brainstorming over Endgame and be like, oh, wouldn't it be amazing to do this on stage after all of this episodic television making I've been doing for several years. Be like, that'd be great. Who could play Ham? So a quick sort of rundown of Endgame, for those of you who don't know, Ham is a character who's kind of losing his sight. He's lost the ability to walk. And he's kind of losing his marbles as well. And there's another character who can't sit down. So Ham can't stand up and Clove can't sit down. And then there's two very, very, very elderly people who are just in dustbins at the back like this.
Oh, yeah. And people feed them dog biscuits.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, give us a jam bun. And they're like negotiating for some old suite at the back of the stage. Very sort of funny, but deeply grim, blackly comic.
Do you enjoy Beckett? Because sometimes I think a Beckett play, the whole point of it is him to literally torture the audience. But literally, because Beckett's thing is absurdity.
Yeah.
And absurdity is... So it's when you know that life is meaningless, but then you search for meaning, even though you know it's meaningless. So that in between is the absurd. Yeah. So, and that can be uncomfortable. So Beckett's whole thing was, here's 3 hours of men eating dog biscuits inside the dustbin, and you're going to sit and watch this. And then you go, what was that about? And it's like, that's the feeling of you being alive, you stupid cunt.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that. Did you? Are you familiar?
So you'll all be coming.
That's. I feel really sorry for the people going. Going to get a look at Robbie Sheehan in the new play. And it's you for dog biscuits.
Slightly more brief than 3 hours. Slightly.
Are you doing an abridged version?
No, the Endgame is one of the shorter ones. It's about hour and 20 straight through.
Have you ever seen or heard of Beckett's play Crap's Last Tape?
Yeah. I've never seen it, but I know of it and I've seen clips, but I've never actually seen it live. I'd love to see it live.
So I ended up doing a podcast on it before. So here's what I love about Crap's Last Tape. So it's a Beckett play, and Beckett's whole thing, like I said, is absurdity. Things that are absurd and ridiculous. And this was 1955. So he made a play, and all it is it's a man on stage, and he has a microphone, and he has a tape recorder. And what he does is he talks into the tape recorder on his own every day and then listens to it back. And that's just everyone with
not
a podcast
unlike your
now.
Good self. Yeah, exactly.
But that's all it is. In 90, it's just it's a fucking play about a man with a podcast that no one listens to. So there's loads of them. But in 1955, the very concept of this, Beckett was rubbing his hands together going, I'm going to fucking freak him out with this.
Yeah. Beckett was, he was always interested in taking things away from actors, you know, from human beings.
Like
taking away the ability to walk or the ability to sit down or taking away actors' bodies. There's another play, I might get this wrong now.
But is this The Lips?
Another play called Nor I,
yeah.
It's just literally a mouth on stage, you know. So he's always kind of hampering. He's kind of just taking bits away of things, as sort of, I suppose, things that we all take for granted to some degree. Because I think
it's the same with his writing. It's minimalism, stripping things back,
stripping
as much
things
as possible.
right back, and even plot. You know, there's very, very little plot to be found in Samuel Beckett plays.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just this sort of mad race through, I don't know, sort of the existential ideas, humor, sort of just like this kind of meandering, twisting turn. Because I suspect that he resented having been born. You know, I really
there's
think,
a bang of that off, am I right? Yeah.
And he's, by all accounts, he was funny. He liked going out to the pub and having a pint and stuff. But the humor was sort of fueled by the fact that he was engendered to this world.
The greatest Samuel Beckett fact of all time. He drove the wrestler Andre the Giant to school when he was a child. You don't know that.
There's a podcast in this, surely.
You don't know that.
No.
So Samuel Beckett lived in France, and Beckett would be like just going to get his morning fucking coffee or paper, and he'd be driving along, and he'd be like, fuck me, that child is huge. Because Andre the Giant was like 8 foot tall, and when he was like 10, he was 7 foot tall. So Beckett's driving along in France. Fuck, that's a massive child. Wow. So he kept going past this huge child until one day he just stops and just says, hark, huge child, man into the car.
Oh, back when
so it was fucking Andrew DeBeck.
People said, hark.
Yeah. Oh. No, that's not a direct quote.
I'm
assuming that's what Beckett said. But it was Andre the Giant. So Andre the Giant was like, used to get lifts to school from Samuel fucking Beckett.
What did they talk about, you wonder? Like,
I would love, imagine.
There's a play.
There is a play in that. Someone has to have written. It's that's rotting in a drawer somewhere. Someone has definitely written that. Or that, you know that Sky, that program on Sky where they get like urban legends about celebrities and they dramatize it. So like,
The Richard Gere one.
Does anyone know the name of that? No, I heard it up there. Jeremy Renner. Urban Myths. Did they call it Urban Myths? So anyway, when 9/11 happened, Michael Jackson and Liz Taylor were in New York and they couldn't get a taxi or even a driver because 9/11 was happening. So the two of them had to share a car out of New York, Michael Jackson and fucking Liz Taylor. So they dramatized that. It's Michael Jackson and Liz Taylor with actors playing them. Or the best one is, so Bob Dylan, in like 1980.
That's not, maybe they were friends though. I mean, they're both ultra
Do you know what,
famous.
Was it Liz Taylor or was it Liza Minnelli? It was Liza Minnelli. Liza Minnelli.
Nice.
But then another one, right? So Bob Dylan in like 1984. Bob Dylan's a bit eccentric. So he was hanging around with Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics. And Dave Stewart just said to him, oh yeah, I live in Birmingham. You should call sometime. So Bob Dylan out of nowhere decides to get on a plane by himself, tells no one, goes to Birmingham and has the wrong address. and then just calls to someone's house in a suburb and says, is Dave there? But the person who lived in the house happened to actually be called Dave. So his wife answers the door and she's like,
that's Bob Dylan.
It's fucking Bob Dylan. Now, Bob Dylan has been famous for so long, he's not really absorbing the situation. So wow. The wife says, Dave's at work right now, but he'll be back soon. You can wait inside there. So now Bob Dylan's sitting in some lad called Dave's living room in Birmingham. He looks at his records. It's a shit ton of Bob Dylan records. And some poor cunt who was a welder, who was a huge Bob Dylan
wow.
fan, comes home and
that's
Bob
amazing.
Dylan's sitting in his fucking living room.
Incredible.
And that's a real thing that happened. And it took about 10 minutes for him to go, no, I'm actually looking for Dave from the Eurythmics, but I enjoyed this conversation.
Incredible.
So they dramatized that, you know?
Wow. I want... I'll drop a name here. Well, since you
you're
know, the,
fuck,
the
he's famous. He, like you're properly when you're properly famous, it's not name dropping.
Years ago, I worked with Nicolas Cage, and he told me that he for a while hung out with Eddie Van Halen. Right?
Oh wow!
And they used to just like get on the beer together and have the crack, and then play guitars. And Eddie
oh
Van Halen,
my
like,
God,
just jamming in Nick's house. And Nick said he staggered off to bed one night, and then he woke up in the middle of the night like. Like screaming guitar. He like went down to his living room and there was Eddie Van Halen on his knees serenading his bulldog. Like, it was like in the living room. Like. And then later he said he called Eddie Van Halen because he'd gone to church and had the holy bread and then later had some sort of food poison and then he puked up the holy bread, right?
And it's, so Eddie Van Halen is shredding and puking Christ in your living room?
No, 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 Nick...
Nicolas Cage was puking Christ.
Nick Cage, right, had been to church and then later been sick and sicked up the holy bread, right? And then
now here,
rang up.
That means he's a Protestant.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he is a Protestant.
Yeah, because you or I, you're not going to start going, I puked a communion wafer. Because you know, you're just going to go, I fucking puked Christ.
Yeah, I better keep it under
that
wraps.
That Catholic shit will come up.
Yeah.
Literally.
The guilt. But anyway, he called Eddie Van Halen. He was like, I feel really weird about it, man. You know, I had this holy bread and then it came up and I don't know what that's supposed to symbolize. I mean, I don't know if I'm supposed to go to church more. And he goes, wait a minute, you're one of those religious freaks? And he's like, well, yeah. And he goes, ah, screw it, man. I didn't know that about you. Boom, hung up the phone. Never spoke to him ever again. He was great crack. He was full of stories.
Nicolas
like that,
Cage.
Nick Cage. Yeah, yeah. He'd tell you stories all day long.
Is he a nice chap? He seems like a nice chap.
Yeah, wonderful. Sort of truly in love with the sort of magic of the world. He's a bit of a druid, Nick Cage. Did you see that his latest film? Did anyone see that film, Pig, where he plays this sort of kind of ex-celebrity chef in Oregon who's gone out to essentially be a truffle-hunting man with a pig? And the film was sort of whatever, but Cage in it was like,
yeah.
Oh, absolutely beautiful performance. And it
do you
jogged
think
my memory.
He, like, the thing with Nicolas Cage, in my opinion, he just plays Nicolas Cage.
He's got a powerful life force. You know what I mean? He's got
oh
this,
yeah.
Like,
if you put Nick Cage into a film, it does the same thing that salt does to a plate of chips.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Hits the nail on the head for flavor.
Yeah, yeah, but you do too much. I always felt that I'd love to see the film Being John Malkovich, except it's not John Malkovich, it's Nicolas Cage.
Being Nicolas Cage.
He would have been just better at it. It's like he would have turned it up another notch.
You know, that could well happen. Do you know what I mean? That if you wrote that script, that's something I'm sure Nicolas Cage would probably consider.
That's
doing.
The type I once.
He's just finished filming a movie called The Unbearable Weight of Immeasurable Talent, starring himself as himself.
It's not a Charlie Kaufman film, is it? Is it?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not too sure.
What
I hope
a fucking
so.
Name for a film. I think we're due an interval now, are we? Hark, people who work at Vicar Street, are we doing an interval?
I hear their drums!
Yeah. So we're going to have a little interval. You can have a gentle pint and me and Robbie will be back out in about 10, 15 minutes, all right?
Oh, it's so nice to see y'all. Woo! Alive and well.
So we're going to take a small little break right now so we can have our ocarina pause. The ocarina pause is where I play a Spanish clay whistle, and when I do that, you're going to hear some adverts that are digitally inserted by Acast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
That was the ocarina pause. You would have heard some adverts there. I don't know what they were for. They're algorithmically generated and targeted at you specifically. You gorgeous cunts. This podcast is supported by you, the listener, via the Patreon page, patreon.com/theblindbypodcast. If you enjoy this podcast, if you listen to it regularly, if you take something from it, then please consider paying me for the work that I'm doing. This podcast is my full-time job. It's how I earn a living. It's a huge amount of work and I'm able to deliver it on a weekly basis because of my patrons. So what I always say is, if you met me in real life, would you say to yourself, oh, there's Blind Boy, I enjoy his podcast. I'd like to buy him a pint or buy him a cup of coffee. Well, you can via the Patreon page. That's what I'm looking for, the price of a pint or a cup of coffee once a month. But if you can't afford that, if you're out of work, whatever, don't worry about it. You can listen for free. If you can't afford it, you're paying for the person who can't afford it to listen for free. So everybody gets a podcast. I earn a living and I get paid for the work that I'm doing. It's a wonderful model based on kindness and soundness. Also, becoming a patron of this podcast means that I maintain full editorial control of what that this podcast is. Every week I get to speak about what I want to speak about in the way that I want to speak about it. And no advertiser can ask me to adjust or change my content to suit their brand needs. If they try that, I can tell them to fuck off. So being a patron keeps this podcast fully independent. And don't just support my independent podcast, support any independent podcast that you enjoy. And that support doesn't have to mean financial. Share it, like it, leave a review, tell a friend, word of mouth. Any independent podcast that you listen to, do that for that podcast because it helps massively, especially in the face of podcasts in 2021 where so much large corporate money is stepping into the podcast space and we have oversaturation with, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but quite a lot of new poor quality podcasts popping up all over the place because the people making it aren't passionate about what they're doing. They're just taking the check. And the podcasting has always been about small teams of creators making something that they're genuinely passionate about. And that's what makes podcasts different to radio and television. So let's keep it that way. Support independent podcasts. Follow me on Instagram, Blind by Bow Club. Follow me on Twitch, twitch.tv/theblindbypodcast. Now let's get back to the chat with the wonderful Robbie Sheehan.
So I did have questions. Do you know what a lot of people ask me about, Robbie?
Go on.
So do you remember, so I did a Rubber Bandits sketch called The Rubber Bandits Guide to Halloween in 2013. And in this sketch, we interviewed a poster of you.
Really?
Wait, you haven't seen this.
I'm honored.
You haven't seen this.
No.
But here's the mad thing, right? So we interviewed a poster of you and Mr. Chrome played the part of you. It was RTE budget shit, right? So RTE
Thank you.
Like, have no fucking money. RT or like, fair play to him, national broadcaster, right? But so they're like, do a guide to Halloween, go out onto the streets of Dublin and try to do sketch comedy. So we were literally at the stage where it's like, they wouldn't pay for any props. Like, the whole sketch ends with Mr. Chrome falling on 24 eggs. Like, we had to do it once because they wouldn't pay for, like, 50 eggs. Seriously. Seriously. Like, and we had to do it on the grounds of RTE because they wouldn't pay for location. This was 2013, height of the recession. 50 eggs? You want 50 eggs? So we had to do 24 eggs in one scene. So anyway, we were starving for jokes. And while we were interviewing people in, like, Grafton Street, we saw a poster of you. It was a Robbie Sheehan calendar.
Calendars followed me around for years.
But so while we're interviewing it, and this was 2013, we said, Robbie Sheehan, what's your next project? And the answer that your character in our universe gave was, three words for you, man, saucy time travel. And then we said, what do you mean, Robbie? And then your character said, I go back in time and fuck men. And then a bunch of people said, this is actually the plot to Umbrella Academy.
Yeah. It is. It's pretty bang on.
And
Loads
of people say to me all the time, they think like, did you know something in advance and you had told me the plot of Umbrella Academy in 2013? No. And I'm trying to go, he wasn't even on Love. You were on Love Hate at that point.
And here's a bit of trivia for you. Originally in the lead up to doing Umbrella Academy, Klaus goes back to Vietnam and then, but like, you don't know that bit yet. You just see him hanging around this old folks home and sort of kind of leering at this elderly Vietnamese lady. And then it's revealed that he goes back and he had a relationship with a woman and they had a child, but he had to kind of get back to the present before whatever, the Saigon Tet or whatever it was. So then Steve Blackman called me up and was like, what if you had like a, you know, affair with an American GI instead? I was like, yeah, that could be quite interesting. Yeah. And it just kind of seemed like a more interesting thing. So
you're saying that Steve Blackman watched our sketch, The Rubber Bandits Guide to Halloween from 2013?
I think he probably did. He's probably an avid Rubber Bandits fan. But so, yeah, that took a gay turn quite late in the game, really. Yeah.
What has the Umbrella Academy has kind of really changed things for you internationally, I'm guessing?
It's that distribution, man.
The
Holy
Netflix shit.
Yeah. It really has. Netflix is in like 190 countries or something. Yeah. So it's great, you know.
Finding, like, you're just a normal lad from Portlaoise. Like,
normalish.
Normalish, like.
I mean, look at the pants I'm wearing, for Christ's sake.
Look, okay.
You could get arrested for less in Portlaoise. Certainly in Mount Mellick.
But like,
go on, Mount Mellick. Hey, you know what? I took a ridiculous route from Dublin to Portlaoise and was driving somebody foreign, and they were looking at me like, "Are you from Portlaoise?" Took the wrong motorway for some reason, and then ended up going through Mount Mellick, which has grown exponentially since I was there. It's like big now. It's like Portlaoise when I was a kid.
Dude,
yeah, exactly.
Have you got a good super value?
Yeah. Not as good as Portlaoise, though.
How do you find fame? Like, I mean, even when you go to Portlaoise, do people leave you alone? Are people sound, or?
No, they don't leave me alone. But here's the, they're resoundingly lovely and charming and often chronically apologetic for having, you know, come over to the dinner table or whatever it is. But like, there's a part of me...
So is that like, oh, Robbie, would you mind? Can I get a little photograph?
There's a slight weariness that kicks in after the 10th photograph of the day. But that's kind of only Portlaoise, to be honest with you, because I suppose I'm from there. So it's like, oh, there he is, quick.
But you'd assume that your hometown leaves you alone. Like, now, yeah. I'm not at your level of fame. I'm just a man on the internet from Limerick, but there's people in Limerick who they don't know me, but I'd be walking down the street without my bag.
Yeah.
And they're like,
I mean, a lot of people
people leave me alone in Limerick.
In Limerick, They a lot of folks must know what you look like now.
Everyone in Limerick knows who the fuck I am. Except my neighbour. Except my neighbour.
But you know what? The bag is a statement to folks of Limerick that you sort of don't want that aspect of fame. But you know what? I must say, I must preface all this by saying there's an aspect of that that I really genuinely love.
Now, there you go.
I sat down and meditated on it a few years ago, especially after the second series of Umbrella went like, fame-wise. I was like, yeah, this is great, but it's also strange because I'm being treated very differently by people now. And sort of like, you know, if you're being treated differently than normal, it feels dehumanizing straight away. And you go, oh, you know, this is different. But I sat down and thought about it and relaxed and thought, you know, if I accept this wholeheartedly and embrace this, I swear to God, people are incredibly trusting, really forthcoming. And, you know, as a creative person writing and stuff, you can get very, very interesting things out of people who are like, you know, kind of want to share things with you. And honestly, you know, as well, like up until recently, I kind of, when I wasn't away working, I'd go back to London and that would be my base, where people are profoundly indifferent to one another in public spaces, you know, which I think Irish people find quite startling and quite troubling. I certainly did, you know, where people are so, the indifference is so studied and so pointed when you're there.
Over there.
It hurts.
It's terrifying,
it wears on me spiritually. And so fame became like a window through.
So are British people like, oh, it's Robbie Sheehan?
Less so in London because the sort of the icicle like screens between people are so intense.
Yeah, I once sat down in Soho eating a croque monsieur.
A what?
A croque monsieur. It's a French sandwich with bechamel
it's your
sauce.
Man who they named Croque Park after. But you know, you're a croque monsieur.
But anyway, I was sitting
from
down.
From Burgundy.
Sitting down with this fucking croque monsieur, a lovely ham sandwich with bechamel sauce, sans egg.
If you
put an egg on it, it's a croque madame. But I'm sitting down. I know I fucking love these sandwiches.
What are they? Cheese and bacon?
It's cheese, bacon, bechamel sauce, right? So I'm sitting down and I was looking forward to this, like, because I'm not in London loads and I'd gone specifically here and I'd got a lovely seat by the window, sitting down with the croque monsieur. Fucking Benedict Cumberbatch. Walks past and has a good old look at my croque monsieur and licks his lips and like, walked on. And I can't.
He's like, I haven't eaten one of those in
yes!
5 years.
Yes! Yes!
Oh, God.
He fucking coveted my croque monsieur with his British tongue. But it made me realize afterwards, it's like, that could have been anyone. But it's like, it's Soho. There's Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, it's
no,
like
gives a shit.
It's a story.
And then
when
half
people
an hour later, there's Vic Reeves in a comic book shop.
Yeah.
So,
do you know what? I nearly got, well, we sort of decided against it ultimately. We thought it'd be confusing. But Vic Reeves was going to do some artwork for my
fuck
book.
Fuck off.
Yeah, yeah. I was a couple of New Year's Eves ago and we got far too drunk together down in there.
You did in your hoop.
Yeah.
You got to meet Vic Reeves.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to meet him. Is he the type of person now who wouldn't like being people coming up saying hello to him?
I think he would like it. I think he's a very outgoing individual. He's a very sort of people, you know, sorry, charming. He loves being at parties. He loves being surrounded by people. So I suppose there's an aspect of him that hopefully loves it. Otherwise, he's tormented his entire life, you know.
But it's a weird thing because some people like. So you have the type of personality where you enjoy it.
I do because, you know, you learn the tools of it, how to politely get people to fuck off, you know. But in the meantime, you're like, you know, you can sort of play with people and have a laugh and kind of riff off their nervousness. And, you know, there's a whole little microcosm of creativity that can happen.
Right, let's see. I'm going to ask some this is a weird question.
Are these from the folks?
These are
internet?
From the Instagram. Big, large type. ask him about his memories of Puck Fair as a young fella. Goat emoji. Also, and he's... Oh, we already covered Nicolas Cage, yeah. So Puck Fair as a young lad.
Puck Fair.
Goat emoji.
For those of you who don't know the great sort of vaguely pagan festival that happens in Killorglin in Kerry, Puck Fair. We've got some high claps over there. They're probably from Kerry. where they make a wild mountain goat king for 3 days yeah. in Killarglen. And they put a golden crown on his head and they put him on a 20-foot stand in the middle of town, because that's the town where my father's nearest from. And so we used to go down there on summer holidays. And it was mega crack. Like, the whole town would be wedged with people. Exactly. And, it was mega crack. I mean, I had my wallet stolen a few times down there, like, lifted off me. But it's a kind of a horse and donkey fair, and it's like every pub is wedged to the rafters, and there's kiosks selling all sorts of stuff. And it's everybody's just having a massive hoolie around the goat. And if you ask anyone down there, they're not really sure why there's a goat. No one can. Very few people know the etymology of the goat. I don't know.
I do.
Oh, really?
Apparently, how it started was it was around the time of Cromwell, right? Oh, yeah. So the Brits would have been invading various villages. Now, this is one of those things it's not proven, but this is the story. So apparently, the Cromwell's forces were coming towards the village in Kerry, and they had disturbed a herd of goats. And because the people in the village knew that these wild goats would never come into town, this wild goat comes in, and people went, something's not right here. And they're like, why is this wild goat here? And then they went, fuck, the Brits are coming. Right. So they all escaped.
Natural next thought.
They escaped, and they were never massacred in the Cromwellian invasion. They were never massacred. And from then on, they said, let's get a wild goat and put him up really high and get pissed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we weren't killed.
There was one version of that story I heard, which was a goat came running into town and warned everyone that Oliver Cromwell...
It's like a talking goat.
All right, but that actually does. That sounds kind of. That sounds more believable, more legit.
But again, with stories, like when you hear a story that's when you hear a piece of history that's really interesting, I'm always skeptical of it.
Like down in Ballinspittle in West Cork, myself and my mother went past there recently. We stopped at this Virgin Mary statue, which in the early 80s apparently moved, right? And it created all this traffic and this sensation. And there's all these pictures that are in frames next to the Virgin Mary of like hundreds and hundreds of people all just standing there in the rain waiting for her to move again. And all these chip vans and burger vans and stuff around. You're like, this is one enterprising chip van restaurant owner fella who decided to spread a bit of lore about the Virgin Mary.
Yeah, I need to look into the moving statues.
Yeah, this...
I mean, because it's one of those things that is like, wow, like it was the 80s. The internet had been invented by then. Like, I mean, the fuck are we at?
Yeah. And I think people just wanted something.
They really wanted something.
Yeah.
They wanted something. I mean, sometimes I compare it to Ireland's corporate tax rate. well, if you think of...
That's the new moving statue.
So if you all right, if you're down in Kerry and you go, there's a statue and it's moving and it's of Christ's mother.
Yeah, yeah, and you say it with enough earnestness.
Yeah, then everyone's going to be like, fuck me, I want to go to Ireland.
Well, yeah.
So then they got rid of the moving statues and said, instead, why don't you just have a company here and you don't have to pay tax?
Yeah. Do you think it was Charlie Haughey disseminating this information?
It could have been.
Through the Irish countryside to boost the economy.
I became obsessed with relics there for a while, you know, Catholic relics. In particular, the saga of Christ's foreskin. Yeah. I did a podcast on it, but... So, come here and I tell you.
I haven't heard that one.
So, here's the deal, right? So, Christ was Jewish. Christ was circumcised. This is what happened. He was born before Christ... like woke up and went, fuck me, God's my dad. He was just like a Jewish baby who had the skin of his dick cut off. So then people were like, hold on a minute. You can't just go cutting the top of Christ's dick off and then not have that as this really holy thing. So what happened was, because Christ ascended to heaven, you see. So how do you remove his dick, the piece of his dick when he's a child?
Do you think...
And then he goes on. It causes the whole of Catholicism to fall apart.
Yeah. Do you think his dick skin was just going up, ascending
near
him?
Well, here we go. So what happened was, all throughout the Middle Ages, someone claimed to have, like, I've got the fucking, I've got top of Christ dick. And it became a fucking relic. And the first one was the 12th century King Charlemagne of France gifted somebody, you know, Christ's foreskin as a relic. But what happened was, is other foreskins emerged around Europe. So for about 400, 500 years, there was all these competing versions of Christ's foreskin where people were saying, we have the real one, we have the real one. But the beauty of a relic in medieval Europe is it was quite similar to Ireland's corporate tax rate. If you had a village and all of a sudden you've got a class relic, like in Dublin, you've got St. Valentine's heart. What the fuck is that? Mad shit. Saint's heart. But yeah, St. Valentine's heart is like up the road.
Wow.
Yeah. What church is it in? Christ Church. The heart of a fucking saint from the
fort. Can you go in and see it?
You can.
Amazing.
You can.
I'd like to see that.
You could headbutt it. But like, he was kicked out of Christ Church for headbutting St. Valentine's heart. Yeah. And the guards came along and they shot him. Robbie Sheehan was his name.
I'll be doing that in promotion next week.
But anyway, right, so there's all these foreskins around Europe, and what they used to do with relics was if you had a decent relic in your village, it meant that your village all of a sudden became very important economically because people would travel to see the relic.
Yeah,
so it was used like that.
Totally. And, you know, probably Ballinspittle is probably another example.
It's the same
of
shit. But what happened was the church eventually had to address the foreskin. And this is the Catholic Church's literal response. And I'm not fucking joking. They said, no. There's no such thing as Christ's foreskin because he ascended to heaven. So here's what happened. Christ, he did have the top of his dick chopped off. It wandered the earth for 33 years. And then when Christ died, his foreskin separately ascended with him and became the rings of Saturn. That's the fucking actual Catholic Church explanation for Christ's foreskin.
Isn't
that mad?
Woo! Catholic Church! Do you think they ran that by the Pope before they put it out? They're like, just read that. Is that all right?
It's
that's
one
good?
Of those. Yeah. Yes. But that's the class thing about the Pope. The Pope has the ability to have revelations. So
don't we all?
When the church doesn't have an answer to something, the Pope fucks off into a room and says, it was revealed to me. Yeah. Like, Holy Mary, they're like, there was nothing in the Bible about how did Holy Mary die. So it was a Pope in like the 1940s, went into a room and said, she actually just shot into the sky. And people were going like, you mean her soul, Pope? Like her soul? No. She fucking shot into the sky.
Like,
how do you know this? It was revealed to me in the room. Legit.
Like Mun Ra, the ever-living.
Yeah.
By the power of Grayskull.
Wow.
They've got balls to put that out, isn't it? They're like,
it's the Catholic Church. They don't give a fuck.
We are the truth.
Yeah. Someone on Instagram was wondering, were you a fan of My Chemical Romance growing up? And does it feel weird now working with Gerard Way?
Thank you. I wasn't a massive fan of My Chemical Romance growing up, to be honest. But I found him, I was like, whoa, I was quite bedazzled by him, especially in that music video, The Black Parade.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
He was so beautiful and so androgynous. It was like, whoa, who's that gorgeous creature? So I suppose having that childhood concept still sort of drifting around in the back of my head while I'm talking to the man, it can be quite odd, you know.
Could you ask him if he finds the backlash from wearing typically non-masculine clothing to events difficult to deal with?
How dare you? This is the most macho I've looked in several days.
I think you look fucking fantastic.
Thank you.
People...
See? No answer need be given past that, you know?
Do you dress yourself?
Yeah.
No, but seriously,
just,
like...
Just, mostly in thrift shops and stuff. I don't like paying
much
money.
You have a natural sense of style then.
I must say, other than... Actually, I bought them shoes today and they were, frankly, an inordinate amount of money. But I thought I can get away with them as a business expense because I have this gig tonight. And, you know, the tax man will leave out the detail that it's just audio, right?
I do that with Dioralite and Alka-Seltzer.
Jesus.
I do. Business expense.
But, you know... I hope that's not the only thing you're writing off. How much Dioralite and Alka-Seltzer are you buying per annum?
I guess it's a foolish thing, I suppose. I just kind of got to the point where I'm like, fuck it. If ever I have a hangover, I'm like, Jesus, I'd love some Alka-Seltzer and Dioralite. And I hated the feeling of having a hangover and being like, it's not here. So then I said, why don't I, like, from now on, every single gig I do ever, just say to them, they have to give me a box of Dioralite and Alka-Seltzer. But I don't need that much. So I just have like six drawers at home that's full of Dioralite and Alka-Seltzer. And it's one of those ones where, like, if I ever just died suddenly... do you know the way, like, when Bin Laden died, they went in and looked at everything he owned and scrutinized it? Now, I'm not saying that would happen if I died, but, like, I wouldn't like the guards coming in and going... he had six drawers of Alka-Seltzer and fucking Dioralite, you know?
What did Bin Laden have?
Bin Laden had lots of hair dye, which the CIA really? Used to go, ha ha, jihad, he was vain. And he had the internet meme from 2011, Charlie bit my finger. Saved on his hard drive.
You know, because he's bored. He's hiding out. He's on lockdown in a cave.
He had a letter. He had a letter that he never sent addressed to the Irish people.
Did he?
No. So Bin Laden had a letter addressed to one of his clerics about the Irish people where Bin Laden was going, I was reading about these Irish people and they seem to love religion and terrorism. And...
well, I mean...
yeah, so Bin...
he's not wrong there.
Bin Laden was like, fuck me, man. They love the old religion and terrorism, just not our type. Maybe.
Maybe we should team
maybe
up.
Maybe. Let's go over and have a bit of a chat. So that was one thing. So he was doing that, dyeing his hair and looking at Charlie bit my finger. And the CIA released it all.
They're quite relaxed
at
airport security as well.
But if you found out he'd six drawers full of Dioralite and Alka-Seltzer about poor old Bin Laden, he'd be going, what was up with him? What condition is his rectum in?
Yeah.
But I don't need that much. So, Robbie, if you ever need Dioralite or Alka-Seltzer, gone off Alka-Seltzer from the 2017 Bulmers Comedy Festival.
Yeah, could make a sort of a thoughtful Christmas gift, perhaps.
Why did they make Robert Sheehan wear a leather jacket in Love Hate?
I don't know.
I loved your performance in Love Hate, but I don't understand. I don't
Thank
understand
you.
Why, like, you're there as this fucking hard Dublin gangster, but they dressed you up like an engineering student.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Do you know what it is? Do you know, it's often where people in film and television are quite contrary. So they'll go, you know, they'll expect all of the characters to be dressed all rough and typically gangster. So we're going to go in another way, you know, and it's often that thinking that arrives at...
dress him up like a fresher.
CIT engineer.
Yeah. Love Hate was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you know...
And then,
you
know what's mad? You probably know this. Who was it that Killian Scott played?
Tommy.
He's former minister for housing, Owen Murphy's brother in real life.
Yeah, he is, yeah. In fact, Killian Scott, who played Tommy, his name is Killian Murphy, so he changed it for obvious reasons.
And he's Killian with a K. We can't have that in Ireland. There's like 20 people in Ireland in total. You can't have two actors called Killian Murphy, one with a C and one with a K.
You know what I mean?
You just can't.
But yeah, Owen Murphy is his older brother. I met Owen Murphy when he was the councillor for Ranelagh.
Did
and
you?
Then, yeah, yeah. And then he became...
Did he try and turn you into a landlord and suck your dick?
And then, you know, suddenly open the paper and he's standing shoulder to shoulder with Leo Varadkar.
Yeah, yeah.
Disappointing stuff. I gather he's popular in this crowd.
No. Good Lord. Jesus Christ. Landlords are not popular. Let's see now. Do you know what's happened here? So the type is so big that now I can't read it.
It looks like you've got one of them iPhones. You see older folks like at the airport or whatever. And you could just see four words on the screen. They're like...
And you're there reading their sad little texts. Did you take your medicine today?
Yeah, with the milk bottle glasses on. God bless.
Yeah, that's mad. You'd get the occasional. That's one of those moments. You know when you go into a taxi and the taxi driver has they've got their phone there, but then they have the large type turned on. Yeah. And you just start going, oh no, they're a little bit too old for this job. They should be retired, but they obviously can't.
Yeah, they're supposed to be scanning the environment for things we're going to crash into.
Exactly. And I'm going, if this cunt needs to read this big, what happens if a deer jumps into the middle of the road?
Yeah, you know. And then also a pang of me that goes, you know, I'm on the road to that as well, possibly. Do you know what I mean? I'm sort of heading down the road to increasingly large text on my iPhone. I'm basically getting older and will die in the end. That's kind of...
Actually, on the subject of death, how would you feel what famous celebrity debt would you not... Like, do you ever think, right, okay, you're Robbie Sheehan, how do you not want to die? I was on a plane with Jedward once.
Oh.
They just happened to be on my plane.
Pilot and co-pilot?
And I was just going like, oh man, I'd hate for this plane to crash. And Mr. Chrome was on it as well, because I'm just going, fuck me.
You'd become the rubber bandits and Jed were dying together in the same plane.
Yeah,
you'd be like a footnote in Jedward's death article.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
Jedward and novelty singers, the rubber bandits, die on plane. I was just like, can I die on a different plane, please? So is there ever, like, how would you feel about Robert Sheehan was driving along the motorway from Portlaoise and then his taxi driver was distracted by massive text and they hit a deer?
Yeah, it wouldn't be ideal, I suppose, to get like death by antlers suddenly. Do you know what's mad? The farm that I'm currently living on has deer in captivity on the farm with the horses. It's very interesting. There's just sort of deer wandering around.
Robert Sheehan mauled by deer.
Yeah, after trying to cuddle one in a paddock. Yeah, it could happen.
How are you getting on with all those animals?
Yeah, good. Yeah, I did an Instagram to try to boost sales of my book.
I thought you were going to say boost their self-esteem.
Boost my book's self-esteem.
Oh shit! And you've got a book out.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. It's kind of soonish, but so I climbed in with these emus, and we've been warned that they could lash out at you if you're not careful, if they think you've got food on you. But actually, this emu was wonderful. He was quite media trained. He just sort of stood there quite
what was his name?
Next to me, and I sort of like did different poses with this emu. So we're getting on quite well.
Did he have a name?
Cookie.
Cookie?
Cookie the emu.
Cookie.
And it's a shame, they're both males, so they can't do little emus.
What
it's
are both of the emus' names?
I can't remember the other one. It's in the brochure, in the gaff.
So you're staying in someone's gaff where they have a brochure with the emus' names?
Yeah, they've got all the animals' names. It's mad, it's so lovely.
You've got a book of fucking short stories that you just wrote called Disappearing Act.
Yes, indeed.
And it's coming out now, and it's in shops, isn't it?
No, it's out on October the 22nd.
October the 22nd.
When Ireland reopens fully. Woo! So everybody can go get drunk in the old-fashioned way and then swing by the bookshop.
Tell us, like, so this is a book of fiction. You've written a book of fiction.
Indeed.
What made you want to write a book of short stories?
You know, just writing for fun, you know, writing as a hobby. And actually finding... writing as an interesting tool for acting, because it's nice to kind of prep character as opposed to what's written down on the script for you. You know what I mean? You could practice your lines all day, but the truth, you know, the good acting is done when you create a history for your character.
Oh,
you,
my God.
You can just sit there writing memories and nothing is wrong, you know, so you just, you do literally subconscious character research. And that, I suppose, was a big aspect of kind of evolving into a book.
So when you, if you're given a character in the script and you want to find this character, you will go, what, you know, how does this person like the taste of milk when they were seven?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I was talking to Frankie Boyle about the film The Master.
Yeah.
Which is a film of Joaquin Phoenix. It's a brilliant. Joaquin Phoenix kind of stands like this in the film. And it's because he drinks that, what's it called, methylated spirits.
Yeah.
Which gives your kidneys awful pain.
Oh.
And he's like, he's just some beautiful little things that you can discover things about the character that will affect the posture, affect the speed, affect the movement, affect the point of view, affect everything. You know, you can just discover it by writing it.
So what you're doing there is you're bringing your own creativity to a character that maybe someone else has written.
Yeah.
How does that work in would you ever find a writer of a script getting precious about,
yeah,
I've written this character and now Robbie has come off and he's done his internal research on this character and what Robbie has presented is different to my vision of what the character will be?
Yeah.
Like, what's that like?
One times out of 100 that'll happen, but the other 99 times they're incredibly pleased that you've come in with,
yeah,
anything beyond what they've given you at all. Do you know what I mean? I'll be honest with you, the work ethic standard in television often is incredibly low. It's great. It's easy to, stick out sometimes, I'll be honest with you. That, you know, I just mean that, like, it's really fun to do that research and it's all sort of bodes to the good, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I'm not equating or comparing myself to Daniel Day-Lewis, but he's somebody who, you know, considers his character like a real human being, not just somebody who's reacting to somebody the way they were told to in a script. He's somebody who goes, no. This is a human being who's had an entire life, mm-hmm, who has been under stress as a youth, who has a history, has memories, has stories to tell, has everything. So the fun in acting is often just coming up with all that stuff before you get there. And you'd be amazed how that sort of subconsciously informs the performance, you know?
And is have you ever met Daniel Day-Lewis?
No, I'd love to meet him. Does he live in Wicklow, I heard? Going down.
I mean, lives in Wicklow and he's a carpenter or something. Or.
Yeah, making shoes and cabinets.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, he's an interesting fellow.
I mean, that's an interesting approach, though. Like, no, I've never thought, like, I've no experience with acting. Well, I do, like, I've been on TV and stuff, but I wouldn't call it acting.
You could act under a stage name and nobody would know it was you. Or maybe they would, I'm not sure.
I might put the fucking questions out into the audience now. We have a question over here. Hold on, we have to wait for the microphone. Are ye the nurses? Yeah. All right, fair play to you, God bless. Hold on, fair play to you. Up the nurses. You're after robbing the mic off your fucking friend, for God's sake. She's trying to save her, is what she's doing.
We cover all aspects. We trained in Port Leash, Mullingar, Tullamore. I live in Dourdale in Limerick.
Go on.
The girls have a question.
I love that.
Yeah.
Fair play to you.
Give you a bit of background.
Thank you for that.
That's lovely.
Go on.
Hi. So... first of all, my friend here, happy birthday to her, Emma.
Happy birthday, Emma. Go on, Emma. And
it's comforting to know there are medical professionals in the house, just in case things go awry.
I fucking love it, man. Nurses having a night out at a podcast.
Yeah.
Fucking class. Go on.
My second question is, I know the majority of us are probably here from Ireland, but we always when we go abroad, we're always like, oh, we're Irish because of this.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, Bloodbine Boy and Robbie, what's your favourite memory of ye being like, I'm Irish because of this? Because of like something that happened in your past, your teenage years, your childhood years.
Oh.
I'm Irish because of
That's
this.
That's a great question.
No pressure.
Great question. What unique aspect of your life happened, yeah, which is uniquely Irish, that made you proud to be Irish in that moment?
Which happened out foreign.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this might sound like blowing smoke, but when I went to the Blind Boy Live podcast in Toronto, having been there for about 5 months, and I went, it was this real old, beautiful opera house place in the east side of Toronto.
Oh, that was gorgeous, yeah.
Come in for your live gig, and then all of a sudden, like, I'd just been living in Toronto, working, doing telly day in, day out. Suddenly I walked into a room full of, like, 650 Irish people. And it was fucking brilliant. It was such a fantastic night. And then Mr. Chrome came up to me without the bag on. And because I'd been sort of talking to a few people, I went, oh, and he went, it's fucking, I went, oh yeah, fine. And then we went in backstage. And it was just, that was a beautiful night that sort of, you know, I suppose got me back into the cultural tempo of Irishness, which I felt I didn't realize
the cultural
I was needing
tempo
so
of Irishness.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I didn't realize I was needing so much, and it was brought to me by this man. So thank you, Blind Boy. Truly.
Thank you
very
much. Happened
in the recent past.
For me, I suppose I was over in New York. I was doing a thing with MTV. About 2011, and I'd gotten fucking ossified on Times Square at about 3 a.m. And I was not a type of drunk that I'd be proud of, a type of drunk where I'm nearly crawling along with my fucking fingers. So I'm there on Times Square, it's like 3 a.m, and my hands are going and I can barely see, and then it's like, oh, that's the hoof of a horse, is it? And then I'm slowly, drunkenly climbing up a horse's leg, and then my hand is on a thigh, and I'm effectively assaulting a policeman in New York. Now, the thing was, he could have shot me dead. But then he just goes, my grandmother's from Donegal.
Yeah. You're like, oh, thank God.
So I didn't get arrested because all the fucking horrible racist American police have got Irish ancestors, and I got away with effectively, legally assaulting him while I was drunk. So I suppose there's that.
Lovely.
I think that's all we have time for tonight, because there's a bit of a curfew. Lads. First off, I fucking love gigging in Dublin. This has been my first Dublin gig in 2 fucking years. Thank you so much. This was fantastic. Thank you. And thank you so much to Hollywood actor from Portlaoise, Robbie Sheehan, for coming along. Lovely fella. God bless.
So, thank you very much, everybody, there for listening to that podcast. That was unbelievable amount of fun that I had with Robbie. It was an absolute privilege to do. I hope you enjoyed that. Usually what I do at the very end of the podcast is I sign off and then I play for you a new song from my live Twitch stream. I'm not going to do that this week because the energy is too different. The energy of that podcast was too vibrant. And usually I like to play you a song after a podcast hug when I know that your heads are kind of in a more meditative listening mode. And I don't think that podcast was that vibe. So next week I'll come back with a new song from Twitch. So have a lovely week for yourselves. Notice the change in the weather. There's going to be a little bit of a bite in the evening. There's going to be the smoke in the air hangs differently at this time of year. Embrace it. Don't slip on any leaves. Don't step on any dog shit that's covered by a leaf. That's what you got to watch out for really at this time of October, isn't it? That hidden dog shit underneath a brown leaf. Fuck that. And the worst part about it as well is that, like, so it doesn't really start getting proper windy until like Halloween night. So when you step in dog shit now, that's like has a leaf over it, that it just smells worse because there's this humidity in the air that allows smells to climb, that the smell of dog shit, the molecules of it can climb into the air differently at this particular point of the year. So mindfully enjoy the weather, enjoy the autumn, but don't get distracted by leaves up too high. Keep an eye on the leaves on the ground, and Watch out for that covert dog shit. It's out there, underneath a leaf somewhere. All right, dog bless. Have a gorgeous week for yourselves. I'll see you next week. I'll be back with a hot take.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.